This is a CNA podcast.
Hello, I'm Lynn Suling, and you're listening to Heart of the Matter, where we take a deep dive each week into one of the most talked about news stories. A joke I've seen a few times on social media goes like this. Who led the digital transformation of your company? A, the CEO, B, the CTO, or C, COVID-19? No prizes for guessing which option most people picked. Indeed, the speed and ferocity of the COVID-19 spread has shocked companies and workers who have had to embrace some form of remote working overnight. And yet, here we are, a little more than 2 months since DOS gone orange in Singapore, and in the midst of what can be described as a massive work-from-home exercise. How have we done it? Why didn't we do it sooner? And most importantly, what are the longer-term implications of this experiment for workers, firms, and the very future of work? We'll also be fielding some questions you sent us via Instagram. Calling in to speak to me today are Howard Yu, legal professor of management and innovation at IMD Business School. Hello, Howard.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And Michael Tan, managing director and partner of the Boston Consulting Group. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
So guys, let's just get right into it. What took us so long to get to this reality of working from home? The reality also is that flexible work arrangements are not new. Even in Singapore, 6 in 10 have been working from home on a weekly basis, given a survey from IWG last year. So why has it taken us so long?
Well, I think one fundamental issue is habits die hard. And we human are very social animals. And there are certain strong benefits that suggest face-to-face conversation does unleash creativity. And this is not just about traditional companies that don't do as much of work from home. But if you're looking at Silicon Valley or Shenzhen, for the longest time, we love open office layout. We love unplanned conversation. We love people talking over coffee or water cooler, because that is where this creativity actually got unleashed. So I think it's both a habit that create inertia before people can really move online, as well as there are tangible benefits that manager or management team really see the benefit for people to come across physically and co-locate together to working on some big problem. So I think this is some kind of fundamental reason why, that despite technologies has already been around for so long, people still don't embrace work from home until basically now.
Michael, I'm going to get you to weigh in here. A lot of talk about flexible arrangements was basically, it's a generally good thing. And a lot of the conversation was also working mothers who want this sort of arrangement for flexibility. So do you agree with Howard that it was a choice not to move into work from home or constraints?
So I would agree very much with Howard. I think historically, there's been a fair amount of inertia in terms of embracing teleworking arrangements. And I think historically, as Howard has mentioned, there was also a lot of benefits that organizations are getting from spontaneous communications and being able to just enhance interpersonal dynamics. But I think now that we're seeing very rapid acceleration in terms of companies having to move into teleworking, the burning platform is there. And I think actually it's been really good because many, you know, through necessity, I think more and more companies are finding ways to make it work on a very, very fast timeline.
So Howard, you brought up a very interesting point, which is the idea that it was a choice. And because a lot of these companies are in the knowledge-based economy, where working together breeds creativity and innovation. But do you think also that a lot of that success that companies had in moving to work from home is because of existing infrastructure? I mean, it was a lot of the big tech companies that could make that early leap into work from home in February, in Google, Twitter.
I'd agree. So there is something around a fundamental investment or infrastructure that if you have already been built in. So working from home right now, because of the crisis, it doesn't feel as radical. You basically switch on to a different mode of working and then you're done. So companies such as Google, Facebook, for the longest time, they've been using their own tool to work remotely in order to collaborate across teams around the globe. But even so, if you focus on Silicon Valley, if you're looking at Apple, for instance, they do struggle because Apple do need to design hardware. And designing hardware, you need design thinking, you need to visit customer, you need designers across teams and engineers to work together over a you know, over a machine, to looking at prototype, to test out stuff. So there are reports coming out, and we see how Apple actually struggled, both from the manufacturing sector, that they could no longer travel to Shenzhen all the time to visit their contract manufacturer. So a problem that spanned for a few seconds in the past now drags into hours, if not days, given the time differences as well. So the cost is really tangible. Now, it doesn't mean that company could not overcome this challenge, but they need to think creatively.
I think just to add one point, I think, you know, legacy infrastructure and ways of working is definitely one limitation. But practically, there are, you know, many segments of the economy where remote work is perhaps not possible. So imagine someone working in a manufacturing plant, or someone in the service line, in a restaurant, or driving a taxi. A lot of these jobs don't translate well into remote operations as well. So we just need to strike the right balance around the pace of change and which are some of the sectors that are able to pivot more quickly and seamlessly into remote work, and which are some that may require a more fundamental rethink of how they operate in order to be able to, you know, adjust to this new normal that we're seeing now.
But that's the thing, Michael. You mentioned about how there are operational roles that cannot be working from home, but there are also a lot of roles in companies that are naturally suited to this. So you think about communications, you think about office work that can be worked from home. A lot of the news that we're also hearing is that the trouble is old legacy IT systems. And because old corporate servers have, you know, been a bane for most workers, that switch to web-based, easy-to-use apps like Microsoft Teams or Zoom is something that companies took a while to get used to as well. So why did it take us a pandemic for such old legacy systems to be upgraded? Because the challenge is not so much the frontline operational roles that cannot be remote working. We understand that. It's the other roles that can be, but companies just were bogged down by old IT systems.
Yeah, so I think IT systems is, I think, maybe part of the challenge. I think oftentimes it's also the ways of working. And perhaps I would suspect in some sectors, there could also be some cultural resistance as well. If I reflect on, you know, the different sectors that we have looked at before, oftentimes there would be maybe workers that are in a sector where firstly, ways of working in person is more common, but oftentimes they also worry that if things move to a remote setting, it could be the first step to, you know, what they do being offshore or being codified into a chatbot or something else as well. So I think there are some, maybe some practical concerns and some insecurities in certain portions of the workforce around adjusting to different ways of working as well. So I think there are multiple reasons why it's taken a while. But I think the current situation, I think, has just really created such a strong burning platform that, you know, for their own survival and the survival of their businesses, I think many companies are rapidly embracing these changes. And we do hope that some of the positive movement will be more entrenched even as we recover. And hopefully some of these practices will be more suitable for various segments moving forward too.
But Shiling, I think you raise a very good point. Why does it take so long for legacy companies to move into these new practices? I think it reflected the fundamental conservatism of traditional company. At IMD, we've been working with a lot of clients in the traditional manufacturing sector, and they always describe the budgeting process of the corporate resource allocation. That, you know, even when you know there are benefits in investing in an IT system that are cloud-based, you need to make a business case to justify the investment. And before the pandemic, the benefit is so hard to quantify. This conservative company, they just couldn't move the needle because they need to explain to the board, they need to explain to external investors, and all of these resource allocation process basically get captured because they need to make sure they deliver a very high profitable outcome. And that's why it takes a pandemic that no one can oppose anymore to move to the new world.
That's a really great point that you brought up. It's been framed as something of a necessity rather than something that is of value to companies. You both have also said that how actually, when you think about it, it's not really a groundbreaking change for the way people are working, even though they're working remotely since all these apps and technologies were already there. There have been some changes to entire production chains, but for the most part, I think the changes have not been that groundbreaking. I would like to get your views on what benefits you think this has brought to workers and companies. Is it just that general leap towards embracing new systems, what are the benefits?
Well, I think the implication could potentially be huge. Right now, what we're seeing is just piecemeal adoption. Okay, we use DingTalk, we use WeChat Work in China, or we use Zoom for conferences. But imagine all these day-to-day, face-to-face interaction now basically gone digital on a cloud. So if you're a traditional company, in the past, all your discussion, managerial decision needs to be made face-to-face on a telephone call with no record. Now you can potentially upload all the information onto the cloud and retain it. And so the whole digitization, the whole way of thinking about how can I translate some of these knowledge historically is so taxed and diffuse. Now we can actually build a knowledge management system. So I think we are actually on the verge of a brave new world, that it could imply a shift of organization design all the way to thinking about, you know, who have the piece of information, who knows what. If smart company can leverage such opportunity, they will emerge much stronger than before the crisis.
But Michael, do you agree with Howard that this will spark a greater digitalization of an entire company, or do you see this fizzling out after COVID-19?
I think we're definitely seeing moves towards much more digitalization and great acceleration. And if I think about the benefits of digitalization, I think it's multifold. I think it's an opportunity for companies to really rethink their operating model. So if I use just, you know, my company, BCG, as an example, we're a global consulting firm. We're used to teaming in a very seamless way. But in the past, oftentimes, we were very much, you know, spending a lot of time on the road, going to client side. So I think now where all of us are, to some extent, grounded, finding new ways of teaming and being able to collaborate in very fresh ways is, I think, a great benefit that we're starting to see from this greater move towards digitalization. I think we will also be seeing flatter, more nimble organizations and decision-making as well, as a result of using a lot of these digital tools much more than before. And finally, I think one additional benefit is just it's much more cost-effective versus more traditional ways of working. And I think some of these cost savings can be plowed back into being able to enhance more tools or finding other ways to, you know, improve the top and bottom line of different organizations too. So a lot more acceleration, and hopefully this helps to improve the cadence and drive more transparency in how companies are operating in the future as well.
But gentlemen, you've painted a very rosy picture there. It's not all a bed of roses, is it? For someone who's been working from home, there are huge initial IT challenges, not just your own internet broadband speed. There's also cybersecurity issues we see with a lot of the Zoom bombing incidents. Have we underestimated how much effort this exercise needed? I'll give you an example, a Lenovo 2019 study where workers say that they need tech tools and the know-how to work from home, but they rarely get end-to-end support. One in three say they don't even get the appropriate comms, software, and training.
Yeah, so I think this brings us back to some sort of reality check. The good news is a lot of this work from home tool these days, the basic IT infrastructure is fairly simple. It's all cloud-based. In the past, when an organization, traditional company, want to go teleworking, they still need to use legacy system. And so the customer interface or the user interface is really bad. But as we see from classroom using DingTalk to corporate using Zoom to many companies using Slack, the kind of architecture is quite different these days. So I'm pretty optimistic about the adoption. However, I do think it's the role of leader to think about how can we generate an exciting and caring and kind working environment. Technology is neutral. We've seen horror story that people use technologies to monitor workers' productivity at home, which is unethical, which is crazy. It's borderline Big Brother world. And yet we have seen companies that adopt a much more enlightened approach that generate even better goodwill from employees. So it does call for leadership to make ethical choice because technology is, after all, is neutral.
I think there's been a lot of consumer use of new technologies. And oftentimes, it's been the case that businesses have been slower to embrace some of these technologies, even though, you know, many workers in their personal lives are using it much more. So I think actually we're starting to see the business world catch up and convert to some of the greater use of consumer applications. I think this will continue. On the question around resources being made available to allow for teleworking, for sure it's a challenge. But I think if it is the situation where it is a necessity in order for the, you know, future survival and success of the companies, it tends to focus the mind of leadership very sharply. And I think definitely the resources will become much more available moving forward.
So trust is definitely an issue that seems to be coming to the fore of this. A key question is, when you don't have that face-to-face interaction, how do bosses navigate this period of not seeing staff? A question that one of our Instagram fans sent us is, how do I trust that my team member isn't slacking off? How do I do staff appraisals during this period? Do you have any advice for them?
Well, so at IMD, we always tell leaders, you never telling your manager how to achieve something. You tell them what you want them to achieve. And that's the essence of leadership. And in the time that we all work remote, I think the call for leadership is even more important than ever. So if a manager essentially try to micromanage, looking at the log-on, log-off time, tracking the number of emails sent, track active and idle time, continuous screenshot, these are misguided micromanagement efforts. What you want to do perhaps these days is to do a sort of a SWAT team or scrum type of daily check in the morning to establish, you know, today's agenda, what you're going to do and what you try to achieve. And then it's really up to the employees to allocate their time during the work days. Since we are being quarantined at home, sometimes, you know, at certain countries, we even see the kids will stay at home. So it's impossible to mandate how employees spend their every single minute. But what we need to do now is to establish the clear KPI, what is the outcome, both on a daily basis or if not on a weekly basis, and let employees to achieve those outcomes. So if a leader finds it difficult to even establish outcome, then I think the problem lies in the leadership, not so much around the technology itself.
Mm. Yeah, I think Hao is exactly right. Agile ways of working will become much more common. I think leadership needs to put extra effort in terms of just being able to maintain close connection with their team. And we can do it in many, many different ways. I think the fundamental mindset shift is to move from measuring inputs into measuring success via objectives and outcomes, right? So you're giving the team a lot more independence to be able to get to the desired goal and outcome, and being able to support and steer and mentor them along the way, rather than, you know, as Howard has mentioned, trying to micromanage the journey. And I think this will become much more critical moving forward.
The interesting thing is, during this period, there's this weird relationship between productivity and remote working. Which side of the debate are you on? Because some people say, on the one hand, there's more effort to communicate, but something is really lost without that face-to-face, so productivity goes down. But on the other hand, you hear from people saying they can work at home, they don't have to commute, they can juggle their family responsibilities together as well, and their productivity actually goes up. Where do you guys stand on this debate?
I think it takes a lot of personal effort to continue to engage the team. I think there's a learning curve in order to do so. But personally for me, I find that if I am more structured in terms of organizing my time, my productivity has actually gone up. In the past, there used to be a fair amount of downtime, right, as I spend time on the road, or, you know, I have to toggle between different locations. Mm. Now a lot of the kind of the dead time is gone away. And if I structure my time well, actually, it gives me many more opportunities to be able to kind of focus on what matters. But of course, the corollary is just investing also extra time to make sure that I have one-on-one communications with my team beyond just being very task-oriented in our activities. We also need to find ways to have the social communication happening through remote meets as well.
But that's the thing, like on the one hand, there's little downtime and that's a good thing because we have more time to do the things that matter. But the challenge is that when you do more of those things that matter, you have less time to think about creative things most innovative solutions for a company, the most interesting ideas actually come from free time. Is that going to be a challenge, you think, Howard?
So free time or not, it has nothing to do with technologies, I think, because a lot of the time when I talk to executives, they find themselves very busy before the pandemic, that they end up checking email in the middle of the night. And the reason being that is everything they do is on a manual basis. All the discussion, all the decision being made is never registered or recorded. Now, so I'm on the optimistic side of things for the following reason. I've seen companies using ThinkTalk, for instance, to manage all their workflow and collaboration online. And all of a sudden, they find themselves, they could archive some of these conversations and then put a search engine on top. So the new recruit, when they come in, when they face a similar issue, they could simply search for whatever conversation has been discussed in the past, what are the solutions have arrived, and even to the point of who are the thought leaders or opinion leaders within the company have the right expertise. Instead of in the past, we kind of talk to different people trying to find our way through of this informal social networking. So I think in the short run, there it creates a lot of pressure around productivity because we're still adjusting to the new mode of working. But because we are not just talking about working remote, but essentially we're digitizing our human interface on large scale, the productivity unleashed going forward would be enormous. Now, of course, it requires company to really think in this light, that you actually pioneer some of these new practices, invest in certain app to enable employees to do so, so that the upside can overwhelm whatever downside we're suffering in the short run.
It sounds like you're saying a lot of the technology is empowering us to be the best versions of ourselves at work, but the challenge also is something that our Instagram fans have alerted us to. A lot of them say, is it normal to feel like I'm working less and I'm taking more breaks? How do I deal with that guilt? Do you see that there's a type of busyness disparity where on the one hand, some people are way more busy, way more involved in charting their work? And on the other hand, there are some people who just feel, how come I'm working less?
This is interesting because I think it also boils down to the work ethics, and there is a huge regional differences as well. That's a comment I usually hear from Japan, East Asia, much less so in Europe where I live. And so in Europe, I think historically people pay much more of a focus around work-life balance, as well as just like Michael mentioned before, we need to move into this focus around outcome rather than input. In terms of individual contribution. And in Europe, that seems to be the much more dominant logic among organizations. So I think I completely sympathize with the comment on the Instagram users. But if we want to achieve a better life quality, you know, this might be also a secondary, surprising and pleasant outcome over the long run.
Michael?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think just being in a remote working environment just fosters a lot more, I think, clarity into how time is spent and transparency as well. And I think when you strip away a lot of the extraneous kind of busy work, then we really get down to the core of, you know, what someone is doing and is that being effective and is that helping them to be productive as well. So I think there will be a period of change. I think for workers who are open to it, it could definitely unlock a lot of potential for more balance, for more sustainable ways of working. But it takes two hands to clap. So I think it takes a fair amount of effort. The tools are there. The situation calls for it. And it takes, I think, some, maybe a small leap step by step. I think it can be done and will encourage more people to give it a try.
So on the whole, do you think this remote working exercise is a good thing or bad thing? How many points would you score us? I'm just thinking about it, looking back in the whole workplace versus coronavirus battle when remote working first looked like a solution a couple of months back, controlling the spread. It was said that no one really has a playbook for this. Do you think we do now? Are we getting it right?
I think we are learning as we go. I think there will be structural changes on many fronts because of this current situation. And just looking at how events are developing around the world, I think we just all need to be prepared for a more extended period where there will be more control, right, in terms of movements of all kinds. So I think I would score it as, you know, at least something 8 out of 10 with a lot of potential to be able to drive good outcomes.
Oh, that's a very high score. Howard, do you agree? I'm not sure I'll give myself 8 out of 10, by the way.
I'm sort of also on the side with Michael, because if you think about going forward, it's not going to get resolved and we move past in months. That's probably what we're talking about until the vaccine came along and universal adoption around the globe. If you're multinational, if you have operation, not just in Asia, but any operation across Europe and US, the whole idea that you're going to have an annual sales conference, have everybody under the one roof, that thing is probably not going to be around for a long, long time. Given that lens, then it really requires us to adopt not just a new work habit, but fundamentally think about, you know, what are some of the leadership behavior we need to reconceptualize on the virtual world. Things like a CEO would walk around the office floor chatting with the factory worker to give them a sense of belonging. Small gesture like this, how can we carry them over virtually? I think a lot of academics like us are still trying to figure out how do we redefine the leadership skills going forward in the virtual world, given the physical world would be much, much more de-emphasized going forward over a long extended period of time. But right now, most people are still learning their trick of the trade from, you know, the etiquette on Zoom, mm-hmm. from the etiquette using DingTalk. So we are, you know, learning how to walk before we can run. But as much as we talk about the potential of unleashing productivity in managing knowledge digitally, as well as cutting off all this busyness that historically delivers zero value add, I would give this actually a 10 wow. simply because we should have done that a long time ago, but we haven't done that. Because in the past, we have no budget, we have no excuse, and right now you have no excuse but move digital right now. So this is a positive outcome, if anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the real question then is, there was a study today from Harvard that said the virus is probably going to stay for a little while more. We all know that a vaccine is probably at best going to come in 2021. And so Harvard concludes that this on and off social distancing will remain until 2022. If that's the case, and this is the last question to bring it to the close, how permanent is this shift towards remote working? Do you think it will continue to be a mainstay option 2022 and beyond?
I think there will definitely be a much bigger role for teleworking of all kind and adjustments of operating model across many, many different sectors. I think coming out of this very challenging situation, it's really the companies that are nimble and able to adjust quickly that will be able to kind of survive and prosper moving forward, right? And I think in the conversation today, we've talked a lot about kind of like the harder skills, you know, the technical skills, be more productive. But actually, I think one of the key areas in which people will be able to differentiate themselves, leaders will be able to differentiate themselves, is actually on some of the softer skill dimension as well. So empathy, leaders that are able to empathize and build trust will be leaders that will be able to be more successful moving forward as well.
But do you see remote working as sort of a stopgap measure for now, or do you think that it has rewritten our DNA in companies?
I think it's forced on us, I think a little bit by the unprecedented situation, but I think it will become much more accepted and much more widespread use across different sectors in the future.
Yeah, and I agree with the drive is so pronounced on not just around work from home internally, but if you're looking at the service sector, whether it's healthcare, general practitioner, doctor's office, all the way to some kind of, you know, restaurant and bars. And because of the social distancing, until we really have the universal vaccination, the occasional episodic social distancing will continue from time to time. So even in the business arena, the business activity would adopt much more of a distancing interface with customer and client. As a result, work from home won't feel so awkward because in your spare time, if you need to see a doctor, you would opt for telemedicine, for instance, rather than waiting in a crowded waiting room going forward. A lot of these would become part of the way we perceive the way of life. So it is quite dramatic. It feels like a big football match. Feels so distant now from mm-hmm. the past. But I think as this unfortunate pandemic has really wrecked our economy, it will also put a very strong dent in terms of how we human interact with one another. both from work as well as how we consume services going forward.
Well, Michael and Howard, thank you for joining me today. There you have it from the experts. The often discussed aspect of adapting to this new work reality is remote working. Will it last? I guess we'll have to wait for COVID-19 to be contained and conquered first. Heart of the Matter is available on the CNA website and app under the podcast tab. Subscribe to us on Spotify or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. I'm Lin Su Ling, and behind me, the amazing team of Crispina Robert and Erin Low. Thank you.